Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
This episode is brought to you by Libsyn. Planning to start a podcast? Look no further than Libsyn. Libsyn is one of the biggest feature-rich podcast hosting platforms in the world. Libsyn is IAB certified, offers many hosting plans, and you can start for as low as $5 a month. Aspiring podcasters who listen to the show radio can get 1 month free by using the promo code TSR. Use promo code TSR at checkout to get 1 month free.
And this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news. And this week we have some interesting topics. Gear 6, potentially seeing something from the team in June. Diablo news. We also have Google Cloud Next. Call of Duty Vanguard. I have some thoughts there. Hellblade. Where Winds Meet, which is a Wuxia adventure. And anything that comes up in between that we'll definitely cover. Daniela, how are you feeling today?
Honestly, a little bit tired, but, you know, we're chugging on through and being the little engine that I could.
Yeah, I believe in you. You're going to make it. You're going to make it. We're here. We're here. So Gears, I'm going to have you lead off the Gears conversation because, you know, in terms of playtime, I believe you put in more Gears than I ever did, really. And it's one of your favorite games. So what do you think about a next Gears coming, if it's actually happening, you know, in June for us to get teasers and things of that nature? Would you like that?
I think it's kind of a little bit overdue. I mean, I can't say what I want out of the story. I don't want to go there with this, but I will say it's been about, I think, 5 years since Gears 5 came out. So it definitely seems like this, you know, leak may have some truth to it. So I don't think we're going to be getting it this year. And to be honest, I'm not even sure if it would be a 2025 release, maybe a 2026 thing. So whatever is going to be shown, I'm kind of speculating it's going to be, you know, a really nice teaser to just bring you into it, get that hype going again. Cause we really don't know anything. We don't know what they worked on, what's been happening. I know the Coalition canceled a few games. So, the fact that this is like a potential is really nice and really super exciting. So, you know, sitting here just like looking at that, I can see it. I can see it happening for sure.
Yeah.
Like, and that's super exciting.
Yeah, definitely super exciting. My thing with Gears at this point is, you know, so Gears Judgment is the one that people want to throw away, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't exist. Gears 1 definitely gave you the suspense, horror feel. You know, Gears 2, you know, did that a little bit more. Gears 3 turned out to be more of an arcade game, in my opinion. Judgment was the one that, you know, people aren't necessarily a fan of. Gears 4 was okay.
I like Gears 4.
Gears 5. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gears 5 was pretty good too. I mean, I personally wouldn't say that they're as strong as the games 1 and 3, but they were definitely enjoyable after whatever Judgment was. But yeah, I would still say it's great for what it added.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think Gears 5 really brought it back to some of the things that I really appreciated in the Gears franchise. And if Gears 6 blends what we loved about the first one and what we enjoyed about the third one, I think we'd be in a good place, you know, for the next Gears. And of course, anything that they would consider bringing back, of course, Horde mode. We see Horde mode being added in other games like Destiny 2, which is called Onslaught. And that actually released today, open to all players. So there's that. Any other thoughts on Gears?
It's definitely going to be interesting. I know I didn't want to really go into what I would be expecting from Gears 6, but I don't want to give any spoilers in case you haven't played it, in case whatever it may be. But the way that Gears 5 ended, and if you know, you know, how that's going to play into 6, because you had some, you know, decisions to make at the end of 5 there. And it really depended on what you decided there at that point. So how they go with that in 6 is going to be interesting. So that'd be like the first thing that's coming to mind, but we'll see.
We'll see how it plays out. So Destiny 2, the Final Shape developer gameplay preview reactions. So they released a teaser dev conversation with trailers in between that, you know, for Destiny 2, the Final Shape. The Final Shape, from what I remember, they were saying that the preview for that was extremely low. Of course, we know a lot of these studios suffered from, you know, different layoffs and things like that. And of course, we hope the teams and those individuals bounce back from that. But we're at a place now where Destiny, with what I saw today, you know, new enemies. Of course, they have, you know, the guns that we appreciated from the series. Some of the guns are coming back, which is a good thing. You have a new subclass, which is a light and dark combined for Destiny 2, which is pretty amazing. And I think that one of the things I see that's really good about that is the fact that the enemy that we're getting ready to face, the Witness at the end of Destiny, which is not technically the end of Destiny according to the intro of that particular video, is that you need everything to work in your favor to beat this boss. So the fact that they're actually crossing light and dark to create a transcendent subclass, which is a new subclass for all the guardians, and the fact that you're going to be able to get, you know, exotic pieces that has the different powers of the other guardians that you're going to be able to get as a role, random role on your stuff. So now you're going to be chasing roles for some of the pieces that you actually put on your guardian. I think that Destiny needed something that is going to have us go back into the rabbit hole. So watching this particular dev preview for the things that they have coming up for the Final Shape, I think it's something that we needed to see. At the end of the day, and I'll just kind of like end it here a little bit, if we get the same things that we appreciated from the first title, and it's remixed, you know, for the game that we currently have, I think everyone is going to be happy, which is the same formula that we've seen for Call of Duty for the last 9-10 games at this point, whatever the number is. And the fact that Destiny is focusing on bringing us things that we're familiar with, like the Onslaught stuff, which is a hard mode for Destiny 2, a new subclass, weapons that we've appreciated, making the Guardian have more things that you can add to the Guardian. You could change your face if you didn't like the face that you originally chose for your Guardian, right? So you could do those things. You could change your name. I think they're given a token for that. So there's a lot of things that people are excited about. But at the end of the day, I believe that the pre-orders are going to go up because of the changes that, or because of the preview, not necessarily changes, because of the preview that we saw today, for, the Final Shape. So, those are some thoughts on there. Any comments? Destiny stuff?
Destiny is all you, man. That's all you.
It's all me.
But yeah,
I'm excited.
By making everybody happy, he really means just making Andrew happy.
Yeah, I'll take that for sure. I'll take that. But yeah, so it is exciting stuff. I am excited for where the game is going. I feel a little bit better to pre-order whenever I do that, you know, the next installment of Destiny, which is the final shape. So I'm looking forward to that for sure. So those are the thoughts there. Definitely go check it out if you haven't. It's about 18 minutes. I think they cut it down to 18 minutes exactly for that particular preview for Destiny 2, the final shape. So Diablo 4. Diablo 4, Xbox is the number one platform for Diablo 4 players, says Xbox president Sarah Bond. Any thoughts on Diablo and Xbox?
I feel like that's pretty believable. Like, I know executive heads are like supposed to like boost things and maybe add a little flourishing to it, but I feel that's like pretty honest and very, very believable. I mean, I know that PC has a huge player base overall, and that typically a lot of them I know are, you know, playing on PC. However, it's like, it's amazing because I also believe that console players, as much as I love my PC and I know a lot more PC players, I think that just happens to be true. I think there's a whole lot more console players than PC players. And the fact that they're getting their hands on this, it's on the Game Pass, it's available to them. Yeah. So much, like, that's so believable and it makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really played a Diablo game. So this is RTS? Is that the RTS genre? Is that what it's considered? Real? Is it?
You're asking the wrong person. I don't play Diablo.
I'm trying to figure out if it's real time.
Get me to play it, and I haven't. I have not broke. I haven't broke for 1, 2, or 3. I don't think 4 is going to get me either. I think I'll play Baldur's Gate before I touch Diablo. Just a personal preference, and maybe at this point, it's just out of spite for my friends.
I think it is a real-time strategy game. I think that's a genre. I could be wrong on that. Please do not stone me. I think that's what it is, but we'll move on. So excited for the Diablo 4 players, so go ahead and keep crushing it in that particular arena. PlayStation 5, Jim Ryan did a podcast with the official PlayStation podcast folks. Jim Ryan says PlayStation 5 is well on track to be Sony's most successful console ever. And, I'll give it to you and then I'll share some thoughts after. Go ahead.
See, this is what I mean about, you know, those executive top dogs over there flourishing stuff. I love my PlayStation. I really, really do. I don't know if I would believe that someone like Sony's most successful console ever. Do I think it's doing well? Yes. Do I think it's going to be the most successful of their PlayStations? I feel that's really, really debatable. I think it's going to do in the lifespan that it has. I think it's going to do really well. I don't know if it's going to be better than 3. There's something about, I need to go look it up now. I need to go fact check myself.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead and fact check. Let me know what you find. But when it comes to this conversation about the most successful console ever, it seems like we've seen this conversation for the fourth one, for the third one, and I would believe all time at this point will be for the second one, right? In terms of, yeah, of console sales. So, and I would think that it's still early to even, you know, make a claim like that. But I guess with his exit on the way, for everything that he's contributed to the PlayStation brand, you have to give, you know, a take before you get out of there. Right. So I don't know. I guess it's something that we have to see play out. But from what I recall right now, PlayStation 2 is one of the biggest consoles that sold a lot right now, right? All time for PlayStation. I don't know if it's all time, but definitely for PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see what they're going to do with PlayStation 5. Any additional thoughts there?
Okay. So let's look at this. PlayStation 5 released in 2020. They've sold estimated like 53 million. Their PlayStation 4, 117.2 million. The PlayStation 3, 87.4 million. Okay. As much as I like the PS3 and I thought that number was going to be higher. I mean, I think it's going to exceed the PlayStation 3 sales. I don't know about the PlayStation 4 sales though. But The PlayStation 2 had 155 million units sold.
So far.
I love the PlayStation 2, okay? So, and the original PlayStation was 102.5 million.
So PlayStation 2 is still leading?
Yes, it is.
And PlayStation 5 will probably pass
53
that.
Million right now. I don't know what he's projecting. He's projecting it too.
Yeah, but what we're doing, go ahead.
I think like 4 years in, around 53 million units sold. That's going to be an interesting number to beat there. I don't know.
You go ahead.
Well, just like looking at it and everything that's going on, as much as I love my PlayStation, Xbox has a whole lot more going on for it. That is like their subscription services, their consoles and everything like that. It's hard. And with this economy, it's hard to be able to afford to buy both of them. So people are going to if they're smart with their money, they're going to go and look which platform is going to give me the biggest bang for my buck. And yes, PlayStation still has quite a bit of exclusives. But if you want the biggest bang for your buck and the most games to play, I would say it's Xbox.
That's a good point. Okay, so what I was thinking about, even looking at this particular topic, Sony's most successful console ever, if they're considering the numbers only for that, then it may cross, and beat the PlayStation 2. But if it's more than just the numbers, and if it's a global impact thing when it comes to this particular, Sony's most successful console ever, then they may be factoring in some other things and not just the numbers of the system. But historically, it's been about the numbers for PlayStation, because they've always posted, what the console did for whatever generation it was. Now, no one's talking about the Sony, the PlayStation, the PSVR. I don't even know what that did, but that kind of went under the radar, or, they closed that chest, fairly quickly when it comes to the VR stuff for PlayStation. It was all about, having the ecosystem and the things in the ecosystem. VR was going to be the next big thing. And I do believe that we're seeing folks focus on more AI stuff than VR stuff when it comes to anything that we're seeing on the market right now. Those are my thoughts. And any additional thoughts on this PlayStation?
I think the console overall would still do good money, numbers. I think that's a little bit of a flourish statement though. And you know what? I could be wrong. I don't know how much more years is on this stuff, but I mean, they do have a good sale going on for a bit now. I forget what bundle it's for, but it's a good deal. I know a few people who has bought it, and that's what people wait for. But when you get those bundles, like how much is that cutting into their profit?
Right.
But yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, how it plays out. So of course, where we are today, a lot of the AI conversations happening. One of the things I wanted to talk about here, when it comes to the console stuff in general, we're going to have some additional comments about, frame per second, all that stuff later on. But one of the things I wanted to mention here is, at this point, we used to have conversations about things being just like the arcade. Then it got to a place where the consoles were powerful enough for them to have the exact graphics that we see at the arcade. And now we're at a crossroads, if you will, where you're going to see the consoles be more like PCs. We can say that it kind of started maybe PS3, in terms of, switching hard drives and stuff like that, given the opportunity to do that, PS4 a little bit more than that. And then PS5, with the drives that we experience, for the consoles, whether it's the S or the X or the PlayStation 5 itself. And then now we're at a place now where at some point, these are going to be really, really like PCs and not just, things that we can just swap out, maybe a hard drive, or two. And I think that even in this particular generation, which we'll talk about later, I'd really want to jump into the Hellblade stuff, but I'm going to wait. There are some things that we're still struggling with, you know, with things that we're supposed to be seeing visually, but I'll touch on that later. So, Twitter. Let's talk about Twitter for a second. Twitter, I've been using their premium service, I would say, for the last maybe 5-6 months. When they first introduced it, it was $3. When Elon bought it, it became like $6.99 or $7.99 or whatever. I think I'm paying around that. And when they introduced the AI component, the Grok chatbot, they didn't immediately release it to premium users. They only released it to the premium plus people. So now, as of, I guess, the last couple of days, this particular tool or chatbot, if you will, is now available for premium users to check out. Now, what's interesting about that bit of news is that Google Cloud Next was also today, and they gave the preview for their next, I think they're calling it Gemini 1.5. So I'm like, okay, so you release this stuff to the premium users for Twitter on the day before the Google Next releases the upgrade for the 1.5. It's almost like, did they know that that was going to happen? But it is AI. It is another tool on another platform. I don't think it's anything as different as some of the things that we're currently experiencing with ChatGPT and Gemini and someone gave me another name for another one earlier today. But there's so many of them out there. And it's just like, which one do you want to use, right? Of course, Microsoft, you know, has one bundled for their stuff as well. So in recent episodes, we've talked about AI. How are you feeling about, you know, this particular time that we're in, where everything that we're going to be doing, whether it's the financial district, healthcare, and everything, and gaming, at some point, we'll start seeing that, of course, generative pictures and different things like that, voices. How do you feel about where we're going there outside of you know, people may be losing their jobs, which I think it may create jobs. What do you think about that?
Okay. So as a consumer, I won't say that I actively use it regularly. Not yet. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying I'm never going to. I most likely probably will be a part of some type of regular thing that I do at some point. So as a consumer base, I feel like at this point where I'm at, it's just keeping an open mind. Well, it's not necessarily open mind, as it is just keeping up to date with what's happening, how it's being implemented, who's using it, what the purpose is just to be in the know, because, you know, you don't ever want to get to that point of like, what is this? Why is it doing that? And that's a beautiful thing about our, I think our generation growing up with technology, growing up with the internet, we're just kind of always been on top of it. We're not going to be, or at least I don't want to be. I don't want to be like my grandma who, you know, doesn't know how to use her smartphone that, you know, her kids got her and I have to show her every step. And I remember those times where I don't know if Apple still does it, but I remember Apple stores would have like these free classes to sign up to, so they'll teach these older generations how to use their iPhones. And I think that's what's a wonderful thing about our generation now, having grown up with that, is like, if you're in the know, you're just kind of keep on rolling with it. And that's kind of, as a regular user, as a consumer, that's where I'm at with it. And it's very interesting because the other night, my son, he's like, I don't like AI. I just want it to go away. And I'm like, it's not going to go away. My son's 20 years old. He's half my age. He's like, yeah, but like, there's some really good AI generated videos that are coming out that people are creating. Like, what if somebody does like makes a video of you and you're doing something illegal and you post it on stuff like that? Well, I'm like, one, I know I didn't do it. Two, there is other software to combat. Is this AI generated? Is this, you know, edited in any type of way? But yeah, that is always a concern. And I had to explain to him too, like when the internet came out to the mass public, I don't think anybody was like willing to like, oh, this is going to be a fad. Like, who's going to use that? Who's going to be looking up on this stuff? And it's that very old school mentality of the just kind of rejecting something that is new. And I told him, like, when the internet came out, people had good intentions for it. People like wanted it. Like I remember like advertisements. Oh, I can do my school project on this. Oh, I can watch, you know, see the most updated soccer scores on this game across the world. All of these really weird 90s commercials for this stuff. And the same as I also explained to him, like any technology that comes out can be used for good or bad. Now, how the consumer chooses to use that is up to them. And I am sure, like, I want to be an optimistic person and believe that when we invent these things, we have good intentions for them. And we hope the best and that people will use them in positive and impactful ways. But as we learn, as the internet has grown over the last, I don't know, 20 some odd years since, you know, it's been open to the public and has gone into so many different ways, so much weird stuff out there on the internet, so many dark rabbit holes, that AI has the potential, very, very, very strong potential to do that. Do I believe that it should be regulated in some way? Yes. How? I have no idea. I have no idea whatsoever. At this point, if you're a consumer, I feel like you should just be in the know, read the news about it. If you're into investments, find the companies, because that's the biggest thing right now. If your whole thing is about investing money, stocks, all this other stuff, look into all these companies and why people are fighting and has all these products, have all these different types of AIs. They're trying to fight to be that top dog, to be that number one resource that's going to go to. And whatever company that be, Microsoft, Google, Elon Musk over there, or whatever other billionaire companies there are, they are going to be the ones that you should look into, and all the other smaller companies that are under their umbrella that's going to be utilizing this technology for whatever purposes it may be for investments. Put your money into there because it's not going anywhere. As far as generative arts and videos, that is where I kind of like, I draw a line on certain things. I love unique art. And yes, okay, so AI is like compiling all these images from whatever source it pulled it from in the internet somewhere, to generate these images. I like work that somebody created. I like the creativity of somebody putting that onto paper, whether it be a drawing, a script, voice acting. Like, I love that unique perspective of it. And that's kind of like where I draw the line, where I personally have a negative thought about AI. Like, I'm not going to call, like, if somebody puts in, you know, text prompts of, I want Pikachu on a beach field in the Bahamas with, I don't know, Gyarados jumping over the moon in the back, and it looks beautiful. I'm sure it's going to generate a beautiful thing. I'm not going to call you an artist. I'm not. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to want to buy your art. I'm like, I don't want to see your stuff at conventions. I don't want to see you putting it on Etsy because You didn't make it. Mm. Now, as far as I find it so interesting where video generated stuff has definitely, I've seen, I think the most changes over it, is with the video content of, you know, having more resources to pull video from. To a certain degree, I understand if you're using it to edit a video that you already recorded. And stuff trying to make it a little bit kind of like CGI. You're adding onto something that you created yourself. I understand that. But a fully AI generated anime with a Studio Ghibli feel to it? No.
You don't like those? You're creating enemies right now, but go ahead.
I like Studio Ghibli films, but I don't want something that somebody just fully created out of AI. Like that, for me, that takes away the magic of it. And that part takes away people's jobs. It takes away the artists, the directors, the voice actors. Like, no, I don't want that. I don't care how good it looks, but you know what? When I'm 70, 80 years older than Megan, I probably won't be able to tell the difference.
And that's where we're heading.
Yeah.
And that's exactly
still 40 years from now. As of right now, 39-year-old me, I'm against it. Because I can't tell the difference right now. I'm not for it. But the way that it's going to be implemented is just keeping in the know, being aware of it. And deciding if it's a use for you, but you're not going to get rid of it.
No, it's definitely here to stay. So Google Cloud Next, I really enjoyed it. Main takeaway for me is that AI is going to be implemented in everything. Google also partnered up with Mercedes and some other companies in that keynote. So definitely check it out. If you haven't done so already, Google Cloud Next. It was an opening keynote. It was really dope when I was watching it. So that's our bit on AI for today. Next thing that we have is Call of Duty. Vanguard reportedly sold over 30 million copies. Now, 30 million copies may not necessarily be a lot for a Call of Duty title, because I remember back in the day, within the first 7 days, it'd be anywhere between 300 to 500 million sold or worth, right, for the Call of Duty games when it came to sales. We actually stopped seeing those numbers. It's been quite a few years since we've seen numbers like that, where they actually announce what the number is for a particular Call of Duty title. Now, this particular news comes from, I believe, a LinkedIn page, or someone had mentioned it in like a paragraph or something like that, where they mentioned that the 30 million copies sold for Call of Duty Vanguard. Now, this title, as I was sharing with you a little bit earlier, before we got on here, is that during the pandemic, this title was released. There was a lot of things going on in the leadership, you know, of Activision at the time. And I remember that the branding for this particular game, Call of Duty Vanguard, was, to me, a beautiful game when I was checking it out. But the branding by way of, you know, company and publisher, you could barely see publisher branding on that particular title when it released back in 2021. Now, today, I went back and I played this game again, okay, Call of Duty Vanguard. I installed it and let it load the shaders. Okay. Did all the things and, you know, still had, you know, my weapon. I kind of double checked to see if it's still a weapon I wanted to use. Great. And it is one of the best Call of Duties, in my opinion, still. It still held up really well. It held up better than the Call of Duty with the dogs. It held up better than the Call of Duty when you're running on the walls or verticality and all that stuff. It held better than those Call of Duties, even though that it's probably the one that didn't sell as many copies, but 30 million copies for anything, especially when you hear like a Sonic game doing 3 million here or another game doing 7 million there, but 30 million copies for a title is still a lot, but not necessarily for Call of Duty. And it is one of the most underrated Call of Duties to me in all of the franchise. So those are my thoughts on there. I don't know
I have
why.
A question for you though.
Go ahead.
So, you know, bringing up, going back to what you said, like, you know, back in the day, Call of Duty used to pull these huge numbers, and it's been a while. I mean, before Vanguard, I think they were still doing pretty decent, but like, I honestly think that the popularity behind Call of Duty is definitely not quite the same as it was, let's say, 2005-ish.
Yeah, so Call of Duty 4 is monumental because it went from, you know, World War stuff to modern, which changed the whole game after that. Like, well, I do agree with you, but in terms of the reason I believe it sold only 30 million, if that's an actual number, is because of everything that was happening in the company during that time.
Well, I'm just talking about not just Vanguard. I'm just talking overall Call of Duty popularity.
Okay.
Overall, because I think with, like, for a long time, and it's still somewhat true, Call of Duty has dominated the PvP shooter genre.
Even today. Yep.
But I feel like the hype for it is not quite the same. Like, they have the marketing for it. They put it out. But maybe it's just me. Maybe it is. I don't see people jumping on it and like, yeah, it's going to be like, I'm reserving this. I got my pre-order. I got all of this already. I don't see that nearly as much. And it could be simply because the people that I follow, the people that I'm around, people I play with, we've all gotten older. And even so, looking at my son when he was, I want to say 12, 13 years old. So 7, 8 years ago. He was stoked about it. He was stoked to go and play. He was stoked to go and get the game. He was stoked for all of these things. He hasn't touched a Call of Duty in like the last like 4 or 5 years. He doesn't care about what is coming out. He's playing other shooters and he's generating that. And a lot of his friends are the same exact way. They're not playing Call of Duty. They're playing Valorant. They're playing Fortnite. They're playing other shooters. So I'm wondering if, are we seeing a slight decline? Is it because our generation, who was hyped for the game, who would go to those midnight game releases? Like, I know they don't do midnight game releases anymore because you just have the download right there. But you don't see that. Like, yes, they have clogged servers when it comes to like, okay, it's out, it's released. They took off that little block there. We can go and play it. But I still don't see quite the same amount of excitement or hype as when we used to go out for the midnight releases, standing in line 4 or 5 hours before midnight, and somebody made their own little Call of Duty tournament as their people wait outside their GameStop doing all this stuff. Like, maybe it's just me. Maybe, well, but I don't see it as quite as popular as it used to be.
I still believe it's a popular game. I still believe that every Call of Duty that came after Vanguard has sold over 30 million. We never saw those numbers, but if this is the lowest number that we've seen for Call of Duty, and I believe it is because of the things that were surrounding it with the leadership and, publisher and all that stuff. Now, when you look at the games that have come out in the last 2 years, Modern Warfare 2 reimagined, and you look at Modern Warfare 3 where it's at right now, the excitement and the buildup for, and even the marketing budget for that title, it was off the charts, right? Now, if we're still in a place where we're doing the midnight launches and going to get the games and stuff like that, I think you will still see that same, energy, but because of how we're consuming games now and how we're even acquiring the games now, we're seeing stores no longer doing like the physical copies anymore. So I think that a bulk of that has changed the way we actually get excited about the game to even acquire it and consume it. So I think that's part of it. But in terms of, again, like the circle of the individuals that you're hanging out with. So for example, I'll personalize it. Apex is a big game. But I can make the argument that you're making for Apex, like who's excited about it, right? I could do the same and then just flip it in that particular manner. Then you have Valorant, huge game, right? Then it's like, okay, well, who's really playing it? Is there an excitement for it if they were to do a Valorant 2 and stuff like that? I believe that there is. It's just that I'm not in that world and I don't know anyone that's playing Valorant for me to make a case for if it's popular or not. I think, you know what I'm saying? So that's where I land there. But when we talk about Overwatch, we both agree because we've watched that close enough that we both agree that Overwatch has had a major decline and other games that are in the space of that particular genre where you have the Marvel Rivals coming out. You have Paladin still, making splash, and in my opinion, because, I'm biased, I like that game. But Overwatch has taken a turn. They removed stuff that they were planning to release or just not remove, but they slashed it out of some of the things that they're considering. So we both agree because we've watched that close enough that Overwatch has done a major decline. But if they were to post sales for the last 2-3 Call of Duty since Vanguard, I would be shocked if it wasn't over $30 million. 30 million copies.
It probably most definitely is over 30 million copies.
Right. Right. And I think where we are now with how we're consuming and, you know, acquisition of games and stuff like that. I think that has changed. And then of course the landscape of the FPSs that are out now, we have more options and they're getting really good and not necessarily making a dent in what Call of Duty has done. Maybe a small dent by way of market share, but we have a lot of games out now that we could choose from in that particular genre, but make no mistake, Call of Duty is still, you know, the king out here when it comes to amassing, you know, a lot of copies sold and still have some dedicated players that are, you know, pushing the title. Probably one of the most streamed games on YouTube and I'm sure Twitch, you know, if you look at some of the players that are playing that particular title. And, but I think it's unfortunate that certain games just go under the radar. We talked about Titanfall. Because of, you know, that situation being in a window of Call of Duty didn't get as much praise, but a beautiful game. And I think the same thing for this particular title because of what was going on in 2021 and the leadership. Nobody wanted to buy it because they were like, oh, the leadership is, you know, doing this, that and the other. So we're going to stay away from Call of Duty. And I think that really impacted the game. So, but overall, you know, it's still a title that people, I guess, wish they can have those numbers in terms of copies sold.
Interesting Call of Duty topic here.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, Vanguard is underrated, in my opinion. And after going back and playing it today, I was just like, this game, the music, the atmosphere, the weapons, you know, how the players move when you get kills, you know, how the game feels overall. I was pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed it more than the first time that I played it, which those are my thoughts there. Call of Duty Vanguard. Check it out. Okay. So Hellblade, we kind of held off on Hellblade and I'm a little irritated with this particular bit of news, but I think we have to talk about it because that's what's happening now. And in the sphere of them getting ready to bring out the game in May, I believe Hellblade 2 right around the corner. So do you enjoy shorter games, Daniela? How do you feel about shorter games and what does that look like for you? We could talk about that and then lead into Hellblade 2.
At this stage in my life, yes, I would like shorter games as long as the price tag reflected it. Am I going to pay $70 for a 4-hour game? No. Will I pay $20 for it? Yes. But I guess that's really what you consider to be a short game. Cause I know people who would say that 30 hours of gameplay is pretty short. Right now for me, my lifestyle and everything that's going on, 30 hours is really long. In the last 3 months, I have found 3 hours to play, Infinite Wealth. It is not a lot. But right now I do, like, I think I would love to have a game that is shorter, that is very, very focused. And at this point, not too story heavy. Like Stardew Valley is great for that. And that has hours of gameplay in it. Graveyard Keeper, you know, those types of games, which are, they have, you can amass a lot of gameplay hours on it, but they're kind of like okay for shorter gameplay times. Whereas there's certain games where like, oh, okay, if I'm going to turn this on, I got to sit here. We're focused on this. I can't do that right now. My lifestyle does not allow for that. I'm amazed. I didn't even have time to watch the latest episode of X-Men this week. And that makes me sad. But right now, I think so. I think busy adults, probably. I won't speak for all of them, but I will say for me, like, I would like that.
Yeah, so average for me, I would say 8 hours. That would be considered a short game. Borderline short, right? 8 hours. And so this particular article is interesting. It talks about the actual team believing that their core base, I guess I'll specify that, Hellblade 2, a Studio Ninja Theory thinks its fans, right, enjoy shorter, more focused games. And I think that for the last couple of games, that's what they've done, right? And if they have data to back that up, great. But again, you set a particular number of what is considered short. I set a particular number. So it depends on, you know, what's happening.
If you put it into the context of Hellblade and Hellblade specifically, when I played Hellblade 1, I was so super pumped to play it. I was like really excited. I did stream it and I played that entire game in a single stream. I think it was about eight and a half hours.
Okay.
So I finished the entire game in one sitting. I miss those days. But yeah, if you're considering 8 hours short, then yeah, Hellblade 1 is a short game. I have no regrets buying it. I absolutely love it. And I know I'm not the only one to love it. People fell in love with this game that has, like, even though I kind of like went through this game, I would say if you're like not that great, maybe 10, maybe 11 hours. But I would say it's pretty safe to say that the game is at least 8 to 9 hours worth of gameplay, story and everything. And I really did not have to restart. I don't remember at all. So I can see where they would pull that information for and that belief that a shorter focus game is more enjoyable because of the success that they had, the popularity that they got from it. Nobody was complaining that, hey, it was only 8 hours. It was more of like, that was the best 8 hours I've ever played.
Never played. Exactly. Exactly.
So I am very much on them. And yeah, 8 hours is kind of a short gameplay, short amount of hours there. And if Hellblade 2 is the same exact way, I have no complaints about that because with one, they packed in so much. It was a very focused game. I'm just pulling from what they're saying. And it was very like the story, how they told it, everything that you did, everything that you experienced. I want to say it was one of the best like 8 hours of gaming that I've had with that type of game. Like,
I guess so. So let's stay on Hellblade 2 for a second. So the other thing too is like, I remember when I was getting ready to move from, you know, console to PC, one of the things that drew me to even going into that environment is the frames per second, right? 60 or more, depending on, you know, your monitor and the different things that you're using inside of your PC itself. So it says here that Hellblade 2 will be 30 frames per second only on Xbox consoles. And although I want to add additional things there, I definitely want to hear your thoughts first before, you know, we add a little bit more to that. 30 frames per second only on Xbox consoles. What do you think about that?
It's a bit ridiculous for this current gen. And they're kind of sticking with it. They're not going to have an option for you to be able to change it. However, that is only locked for Xbox. If you buy it on PC, then there's no cap, which makes sense because PC is awesome. But besides that, that is a very interesting thing because I believe it was Redfall, when it came out, they said it was capped at 30 frames. Nobody was happy about that at all. Nobody. And I think it was like months later, they released a 60 frame mode. I don't remember how long after, but I know it wasn't day one and I know it wasn't immediately after, but they stuck with that and people complained and they complained after it. There's a lot of complaints about Redfall, but
yeah, what happened to Redfall? Is it done?
It fell. I don't know. Nobody wants to acknowledge it, but I think it's very interesting for something that I believe was, I want to say Hellblade was part of this current gen's announcement that was going to be there. And how many years now? And now you're going to say it's capped at 30 frames. Like that is a, no, like whose decision was that? Like you've had right. All of these years, you knew it was going to be on on Xbox. You knew that you're going to put it on top of there. You have the technology to give to them to be like, no, you're going to make this 60 frames. But here we are. That is not a smart decision, especially for a game that is very anticipated, that a lot of people are looking forward to. And no, it's not just me. And there's been so much build up and hype behind it since the announcement. To make this call-in decision was bad. That's it. It was a poor decision to make. Do I think they're going to go and change that? I think so. I think they're going to do what Redfall is. And I would hope that they do it before the game drops, not after.
They don't have a lot of time. They need to get on that because I think they're dropping in May.
Yeah.
It's literally around. It's not good. It's not good. And I'm glad you brought up Redfall because that really was, it, like you said, it fell and it fell really, really fast, right? First day, second day, we're like, you know, what are we looking at? I started playing it a little bit. I'm like, this feels like it needed more. It wasn't smooth when I played it. And I'm just like, okay, I uninstalled it just as fast as I installed it, which is sad, unfortunate, but it didn't play as well as I anticipated. So now we're here. With this Hellblade being 30 frames per second. I do agree. The main thing here is that no game should be 30 frames per second right now. With all the dope consoles and that we have right now and what they're capable of doing. Yeah, I echo everything that you shared there. So last but not least, Wuxia. Okay, Wuxia Adventure. This title is called Where Winds Meet. Gets a limited beta test this month. I checked out the trailer. Absolutely amazing. I mean, every aspect of everything I saw is like, wow. Okay. So much so that the form itself that you have to fill out for this is like 7-8 pages of information about your console. What do you play? How long do you play it? And you know, like, What else do you have? What is inside your PC? How much RAM do you have? Like, I've answered like 8+ pages of information. So I would be very, very sad if I don't get into the beta after filling all that stuff out. But, based on everything that I saw on the webpage, how they're building, of course, you know, the marketing and getting the buzz out there for it on Twitter. You know, now X, I'm really digging what I'm seeing there and I am going to check it out because I don't think I've ever played a game like this before. I think you could say, Sekiro, but Sekiro wasn't necessarily an open world game, right? From what I recall.
I wouldn't say it. No.
Yeah. But yeah. So what are your thoughts on this?
Where Winds Meet? Yes. What did you fill out for your essay part of? What do you want to take away from this game?
I don't even remember what I put at this point. Like, I answered so many questions. I was like, when is this over? Like, just let me know that I'm going to be able to, you know, have fun with this or at least, you know, check it out and then, you know, check it out and talk about it. But I'm like, this thing is like, I don't even remember what I said. I just remember that there were multiple choice and, the PC information, they wanted, you know, exactly which PC, which brand, which was it, Intel or AMD, all that stuff. And I was just like, okay, this is great because this is the longest survey, if whatever it is that I filled out in years. Okay. In years, but I think it's worth it because I really want to check out this game.
Well, what I find interesting in it, and it breaks my heart because even though I need some shorter games, this game does not look short. I mean, they've released several trailers and their marketing for this is very interesting. So you have a lot of different trailers that are out there. I think there's an 18-minute one that shows a lot of gameplay. And that's what I love. Like, I know that you guys fall in love with these things. And I think there was that Captain Marvel one over there that I'm like, I'm not impressed until I see gameplay. And where Winds Meet does really awesome is it shows you a lot at the same time. you think you understand a majority of how RPGs work and, you know, their class skills and, you know, all the different things that you can build up. This thing is very unique on how they're presenting that. I think in my little essay part, I also added, like, I really want to know what you're doing with these animals. One of their trailers, like, you have him, you have your character who's like summoning a bear, and it's like in slow motion through the air, and then you grab it and you like hurricane whip it into like these rocks to open up a cave. And I'm like, yes, my essay included parts of like, I just really want to know. It looked really weird and really fun. Like, what is happening? And then like, you're summoning a goat, or you're like doing this bear call where this bear is roaring at you and you summon a bell out of nowhere. I think there was a turkey that was chasing him, and then there's a bush that you randomly set on fire, and it was very interesting.
There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. Like, I'm like kind of wondering, like, what does this play into this? I kind of want to know. Like, there's other aspects that I do want to know about it, because the way that there is this one clip in there somewhere, where it looks like you're training, but it has all these different options and words that are floating around, energetic. And then there's one that I can't remember what it said. It was either something chaotic or reckless or something like that for your training. And I'm like, what? And they're just like floating words that you're selecting. And I'm like, okay. And you know, a lot of the movements and the fighting and combat, you know, kind of has a very familiar feel. But my takeaway from this open world that they're putting together, it gives very much an open world vibe that, to me, and somebody can tell me if they feel differently, is like a mixture of Breath of the Wild and The Witcher.
I can see that.
Yeah, whoosh, coming over there just like, I don't know. It was very interesting. And then the way, like, next thing you know, you're running on water, you're shooting
fairies. I did see that. Yeah, water by the ship. So yep. Like, what is going on?
What are we doing? And then, like, next thing you know, like, you think you might see what the story might be about. And then it ends with you just ends that trailer with, like, walking through, like, all these dead bodies to, I don't know, a temple, a god over there, and the guy standing up there. I'm like, I don't know much about Chinese lore. I probably should, but I don't. And I think that's what is so wonderful about it, is there's something mystical and true behind it in a way somehow. And I think it has a very unique take on RPG elements that I think is going to be very fun. And I think that's what they're banking on, is something, bringing something new and fresh to open world and RPG experience. So that's like kind of what I love. And I wish a lot more games did that, where you're not quite sure what this game is, but they show you a lot of gameplay. But yet at the same time, it piques your interest. It answers some of your questions. It shows you what the game's going to be like. But yet at the same time, you're still curious, because there's so many questions you have about what is this game? Like, I want to get my hands on it. And I think they did a really great job at that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's really beautiful in a lot of ways. And I do agree with The Witcher vibe in Breath of the Wild, and a mixture of a whole bunch of other things. Wasn't there a point where it took like this pot and then faced it to the bear? Remember that part?
Yeah, it was a pot.
And then it's like this down waves. Yeah, a pot or, yeah, I don't know what was going on, but I'm like, this thing looks incredible, and I am down to check it out for real. Now, so, interestingly enough, you know, the Asian, you know, martial arts, you know, culture that feels that is in this world, right? And I was thinking about when you were saying that, and part of the reason I think that I really appreciate, I'm gonna try to do this real quick. Call of Duty Vanguard is because I believe the Shanghai studio worked on that, and it has elements and themes that may be connected to Asian culture as well. And I think there's something really special about the soundtrack when I listened to it when I was playing it earlier, or when I played it, and I played it earlier today. But going back to Wuxia, you know, there was a game very similar to this, but I don't know if it was like, you know, Monkey Man. I know Monkey Man is the movie. I know that. I'm aware. But there was like, what was that? There was a similar game like that. What would you call that? I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was like a martial arts title. No, it wasn't Neo. It was I think it was like a Monkey Man with like a bow staff, very similar type of movement, very similar type of martial arts.
Was it Wulong?
Yeah, Wulong. Yeah, I believe it was Wulong. Was Wulong Monkey Man? Or am I thinking Iron Monkey movie or something like that? I know I'm mixing up the monkey business, but I know one of them is connected to, you know, that type of, you know, culture and vibe. And Wulong reminded me of this game, I should say, reminded me of Wulong. So what's the scoop on Wulong?
I've never played Wulong, but yeah, I believe that's the one you're talking about though.
Yeah.
Similar elements to it.
Yeah, I'm gonna just look it up real quick. Fallen Dynasty. Yeah. And so why am I thinking Monkey Man? Because this person was, I'm not sure why I'm thinking Monkey Man. Maybe because there was a cartoon that gave that vibe. And maybe that's why I was thinking about that. But Wulong was definitely a title that gave the same type of vibe where you're
thinking of Black Myth Wukong.
Oh, okay, so there's another one. Okay.
Yes.
So, I'm not tripping. Black Myth. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's the one. That looks really, really dope too. Mystical vibe, open world, martial arts, all that stuff. So yeah. So it's safe to say that this game is, extremely beautiful. There's a lot to do. Okay. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out with the beta. The beta is going to come out, I think mid this month.
April 19th.
If you haven't, April 19th. Thank you so much. So if you have not signed up for the beta yet, it is a long process to get registered for this. So start now. You might finish by tomorrow. That's a lot of pages. It's a lot of pages. It's definitely a lot of pages. Any final thoughts before we wrap?
That's a lot. And okay. The survey wasn't that long. So like most surveys, it's like one page on a Google Doc that you're filling out. This one was maybe it took 10 minutes. Depending on how long you write your essay in there.
That's 10 minutes.
An essay, but they do ask you to be as descriptive as, you know, you want to.
Yeah. 10 minutes is a lot.
10 minutes.
All right, fair enough. But definitely check it out. April 19th, Hellblade is May. Call of Duty Vanguard has been out and it's really dope. April 9th, Onslaught is already out for Destiny. June is Destiny 2, The Final Shape. Gears, maybe June. We might get a teaser, so we covered a lot today. Definitely check those things out. And Daniela, where can they find you?
You can find me on all the socials at Miss DJM. And Andrew, where can they find you?
You can find me at Uriah, U-R-I-Y-Y-A. You can find me here as well. Please make sure you like and subscribe. And until next time, take care.
Bye, guys.